It's really lovely to be here. Thank you for your welcome, for your prayers, for the worship. It's been really good to visit the children briefly as well and to see the good things that are going on there. I have heard of you from afar, and it's very good now to come and meet you properly. And through the wonders of technology, I was able to listen to Simon's sermon last week as well. So that was really interesting. Simon was talking about change, and it reminded me of a story one of the bishops in my home diocese, which used to be the Diocese of Wakefield, used to tell of going to visit a church in Yorkshire where people speak their minds. I say that as a Yorkshireman. And talking to somebody and asking them how long they've been church warden. And the man said, oh, 40 years, Bishop, 40 years. And the bishop said, and you must have seen a great many changes in that time. Aye, he said. And I've opposed every single one of them. I'm sure there's absolutely nobody here like that, of course. That's really good. Simon's generously asked me to share something of my heart for the diocese and our process of discerning from God call and vision and direction for the coming years at this really important juncture. We've been embarking on a process over the last year and a half or so to try and discern that, and we're beginning to reach some conclusions about what we might do, and I think they're really good and interesting things, but they're not the most important things. We want as a diocese to be good stewards of creation, given the environmental context in which we live. We want as a diocese to care for the poor and especially address questions of housing and see what we can contribute there. We want as a diocese to serve our schools really well as 815 churches. We have around 280 schools, and we educate 60,000 children. And we want as a diocese to engage not just with those schools better, but with every single school in our community as we address some of the concerns around particularly mental health among children and young people that are growing. We want to plant new churches and congregations, both for those we're not connecting with now and for those who will move into our communities. We think before 2030 there will be a population of a city the size of Edinburgh, as it were, moving into the Diocese of Oxford in different ways. And so we will need many new churches and congregations, because they won't all move into places where there are parish churches already. We want to renew the way in which we see people brought to baptism and confirmation and come to faith as adults and children and young people, and for that to be normal in every single parish and church and congregation. We want to renew the way we live out our discipleship as the whole people of God in every part of our life. And we want to invest more in our work with children and young people. So all of those are ongoing pieces of work, and we're making some decisions over the next few months about how we might wisely invest in them to support local churches in the great things that they're doing. But they're not actually the thing that is most important about our common vision process, nor are they actually the thing which gives energy to the people of God as we think about that. Some will get more excited about some of those things than others. When you listen to the whole list, it sounds a bit complicated and you might want to go and lie down in a cool place. But actually, the most important thing that's emerged is not what should we be doing as the church in this diocese, but it's what kind of church should we try and be. What kind of community are we becoming, and how do we shape our common life? And the answer to that question, which has emerged as we've listened and talked and prayed, is a really simple one, that we are called, particularly in this generation, to seek to be a church which looks more like Jesus, a more Christ-like church. And we've taken three values which have emerged from our study of the passage which I'm going to talk about in a moment, the Beatitudes, as a focus, because that has eight, and eight's quite a lot to remember. So we have simply talked, and we are simply talking, about the church in this diocese seeking to be more Christ-like for the sake of God's world, and to be more contemplative, going deeper into God, in a world which is becoming less and less reflective. A church which is more compassionate, in a world which is building more and more walls inside and outside people's hearts. And a church which is seeking to be more and more courageous in a world which seems to be filled with anxiety and fear. More contemplative, more compassionate, and more courageous. And the passage I've asked the whole diocese to listen to over the last year, as we've nurtured that vision, has been this beautiful passage from the Sermon on the Mount. The way in which Matthew's Gospel is put together, we are told and signalled to take a great deal of notice of this passage. Matthew groups together the teaching of Jesus into five great blocks through the Gospel, rather than scattering it all the way through. And the first and the longest and the deepest is the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And before this moment, Jesus has hardly said anything in the Gospels, in the Gospel story of Matthew. But now, he goes up the mountain, looking out over the beauty of the Sea of Galilee, and his disciples come to him. These are words initially for the church, the community of the disciples, though interestingly, by the end of the Sermon on the Mount, if you look ahead to Matthew 7, you see the crowds have, as it were, come up the mountain to listen while the sermon's being preached, but initially for the disciples. And he begins to teach them. And he begins to teach them by first introducing them to these eight beautiful attitudes. They're words of joy and hope. Each of the Beatitudes begins with the word blessed, happy. And each contains this a wonderful promise for those who have this particular attitude. So they are throughout, from beginning to end, words of joy and hope. And I think one of the deepest lessons from the passage is that we need to learn to speak of the church again, of God's holy people bought with the precious blood of Christ. We need to learn to speak of and to the church again in the grammar and syntax of hope and love and affirmation. The church in every generation has weaknesses and besetting sins and difficulties. But Jesus' first words to his disciples are those words of affirmation and blessing and commendation rather than condemnation and critique. And then Jesus unpacks these eight qualities in that context of joy and hope. And the sayings are, they bear thinking about. You don't come to the end of exploring the Beatitudes. Sometimes it can be hard to get into them. Each of the phrases has got a rich ancestry in the Hebrew scriptures and a whole wealth of meaning. But here are three questions that I think it's good to ask of each of these Beatitudes. The first is, what does it tell us about Jesus? The second is, what does it tell us about what it means to be human? And the third is, what does it tell us about how to be church together? What does it tell us about Jesus? What does it tell us about how to be human? And what does it tell us about how to be the church together? What does it tell us about Jesus? One of the best ways to read these verses is to read them as a self-portrait by Jesus of who he is. And the Gospels unfold these eight qualities in the life of Christ in a very particular way. So they are like headings to explore as you go through. To be poor in spirit means to know your need of God and to know your dependence on God. And Jesus demonstrates that in his life of prayer, because he is always withdrawing to quiet places in times of crisis, in the way he depends on the Father. He is not in any sense, in the model he sets us, self-sufficient, even as the Son of God. He is in relationship with his Father and with others, and he knows his need of that relationship. Blessed are those who mourn. The meaning of mourning here is wider than grieving for those who've died, though we often read it as a great comfort in times of bereavement. But this is mourning or lament for the world as it is, and for all the suffering in the world, and for all of the pain and difficulty and travail. Jesus finds ways to hold all of that in compassion, so that when he meets those who suffer, he is genuinely moved by that. He weeps over Jerusalem. He is in anguish for the crowds who are like sheep without a shepherd. He weeps at the tomb of his friend Lazarus. Yet he holds all of that mourning within the broader framework of the love of God and the joy of God. And that, I have come to believe, is one of the hardest challenges of our lives. To hold together the joy of Christ and the compassion of Christ, so that we are able to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, as Jesus does. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Jesus is revealed in his meekness in the very incarnation, in becoming human, but also in the way he lives as a person. The Son of Man came not to serve, not to be served, but to serve. Taking a towel and a basin of water and washing the feet of his disciples. Taking time to be with those whom nobody else has time for. And modeling meekness that enables others to grow and to flourish. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. The righteousness that the gospel evokes here is justice, social righteousness, wanting the world to be as God intends it to be, and becoming angry when that is not the case. Jesus drives out the stallholders and the moneylenders from the temple who are exploiting the poor. He is angry at religious leaders who forget the priorities of God and of the kingdom. He longs for the world to be different. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. The first thing people encounter in Christ, when people come to him who are chronically sick or grieving or ashamed of their lives, is mercy. Think of the woman caught in adultery in the story told in John's Gospel. Think of the Roman centurion whose servant is ill. People are attracted to Christ because of that quality of mercy, undeserved love and forgiveness freely extended. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. It's a saying which evokes integrity. Being the same on the inside as we are on the outside. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus will explore what it means to be pure in heart and the same on the inside as the outside, in our prayer life, in our giving, in our innermost thoughts, actually having that integrity running all the way through us is what attracts us to Christ. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Commending the seeking of reconciliation through the extending of forgiveness, which is a feature of Christ's ministry. As his disciples are in conflict about who is the greatest, as different disagreements break out around him. But of course, in a wonderful and profound way, Christ himself as the peacemaker, making peace through the blood shed on the cross, between all things in earth and heaven, that all might be reconciled to God. And finally, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who are willing to bear the cost of their vocation and discipleship. And blessed are those who are willing to suffer for the sake of the kingdom. And again, worked out through the gospel story, as Christ himself from beginning to end is the subject of controversy and dispute and anger and hostility, and finally persecution and death. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. These eight beautiful attitudes are the character of Christ. They teach us what it means to follow Jesus, and they open up windows for us there. The second question is what does it mean, and what do these verses tell us about what it means to be human? The world around us is asking the question. What are my journeys of learning over the last year and a half has been exploring the world of artificial intelligence. As part of my work in the Lord's, I've been serving on a select committee on AI and all the impact that AI is having on our lives. And I began that journey because I was given a book by my eldest son, Paul, to read. Paul works in the digital industry. He is part of a network of computer games companies that he and a friend co-founded some 14 years ago. He, from time to time, feeds me good things to read. And he gave me a book by a man called Kevin Kelly, who's an international commentator on technology and the future, and edits something called Wired magazine. And my attention was caught by the opening chapter of Kelly's look at technology and the future, when he said this: every development in artificial intelligence raises new questions about what it means to be human. And he said, the human race is going to be in a permanent identity crisis for the next 20 or 30 years because of the impact of technology as we think through again what it means to be human. And I thought, well, when I read that, that's really interesting. But I think as a church, we have something to say about this. Because as a church across the whole world, we dare to believe that Almighty God, the maker of heaven and earth, became a single person in Jesus and shows us what it means to be human. So this is a profound point of connection between the precious deposit of our faith and the question the world around us is going to be asking for the next generation. What does it mean to be human? And Jesus unfolds that here. To be human means not to be self-sufficient and imagine that your own humanity is all there is, but to explore dependence on God, the creator and maker of the world, to be poor in spirit and open to learn and receive. To be human means to go deeper than the pursuit of pleasure or leisure or joy or material goods, but actually be willing to mourn with compassion for the needs of the world and have a heart which is prepared to be broken. To be human is not to be content with the world as it is or to ignore injustice around you, but actually to long for that as much as you hunger and thirst for physical refreshment. A precious part of being human is to be merciful, to not be divided from those who are different from you, but willing to extend the hand of friendship and forgive. To be human is to be authentic. As we project ourselves and as the world becomes more and more obsessed with questions of identity, to actually cultivate inner authenticity is the route to real joy and satisfaction. To be human is to be peacemaking and to seek peace across the world and the unity when so much of the pressure in our world will divide rich from poor and different races and those who come into a country from those who live there already. And to be human means not to be simply a consumer, but to be a contributor and to be willing to bear the cost of what you believe and not to bend to every whim and every pressure. Because that is what Christ has modeled. And that is what Christ seeks to do. We are called to be like this. And this is a message of deep good news and authenticity for our culture who does not know what to be human is. And finally, what do these words mean for us as we seek to be church together? And I will probably need to leave you to work some of that out for yourselves. Dig into them and dig into what it means to be a community of people who seek to live out these particular values. As we're doing that across the diocese as a whole, as I said at the beginning, we're exploring what it means to be a more contemplative church, to take God seriously, to dwell deep in God, in prayer and in worship and in other ways, and to encourage people to take time to do that. One of the paradoxes of the information age is that we have more and more knowledge at our fingertips, just a Google search away, but less and less wisdom about how to live well, and less capacity to reflect as we become addicted to our screens and our short-term fulfillment in terms of reflection. We need to be a more contemplative church, mining deep wisdom and the love of God for those around us. We need to be a more compassionate church, living out our faith, and that is what will communicate as our living of the kingdom of God, the way we are with one another and the way we are with those outside. And we need to be a more courageous church. The word courage is a beautiful English word, and it has at its heart the Latin word cor, which means heart. Courageous people are wholehearted people, people who live with heart. And much of the church has lost its sense of courageous and wholehearted and adventurous living for Jesus. And that's what we need to recover. So may the Lord bless you as you live out this vision and the vision God has called you to in this place, in all that you do together. And pray for the life of our whole diocese, for this amazing community of 1,000 churches and chaplaincies and schools and other communities. That God will forge us into a more Christ-like church for the sake of his word, and that we might be more contemplative, more compassionate, and more courageous as we move forward together.